I started off by thinking, what is going forth for me? And like Judith said, there's a lot said about what you're leaving behind and renunciation and what you're going towards as well. And so I was just trying to express it in my own way. So I came up with I've made a conscious decision to prioritise Dharma practice. There's something about prioritising. Prioritise that over conventional worldly life. And in doing so, free up space. So this was a really key word, has been a key word for me. Freeing up space for spiritual growth and insight. And then I was reflecting on, okay, so how's this played out? Because I've been coming along to Tri Ratna for not full on coming along, but since I first stepped into the London Buddhist Centre, it's been 22 years, so it's been a long time. What's that going forth look like over that time? And particularly initially, I came to thinking about the doing and being mode, which some people, smiling at Bridget and whoever Sue is, will be familiar from Breathwork's mindfulness training. So, doing mode, I really remember being very much in my thoughts, in my head, and when I started learning about mindfulness and practicing it, being totally blown away by I am not my thoughts, and that still blows me away actually. Being in my head, overthinking, planning and comparing, which still happen, being habit driven and striving. So this is what I can see has changed, and moving more to being in my body, being more aware of what I'm doing and thinking, and instead of striving so much, just accepting how things are a bit more, you know. So initially, I can see my going forth as a kind of moving away from busyness and distraction, and I'll be saying a bit more about that. So lots of things to do, lots of conflicting responsibilities and not enough time. And moving more towards a quiet, minimal kind of lifestyle. So that seems to characterise a lot of that 22 years. And then later, in more recent years, I've noticed some shifts in my focus and attitude. And so kind of going forth from previous attitudes and focus. And I'll say more about that towards the end. So, in thinking about this talk, I was particularly inspired by one of Bhante's talks, which was called Reflections on Going Forth in 1997. So, he's reflecting on going forth in body, speech and mind. And one of the ways you can go forth, he was saying, it's like an example of going forth in your body, is when you move location. So obviously the Buddha left home, didn't he, and went into a homeless lifestyle. So Bhante was talking about physically moving from one place to another and how a change of place is a change of experience and how we respond to our environment and different aspects of us come into play in different environments. For example, the countryside or a more urban environment. So this really struck me, and one of the things I wanted to talk about was changing location, because about 12 years ago I moved from London to Bristol, and I'd always lived in the London area, and something very significant for me about what's come through me by changing location, significant for my Dharma practice. And so I was just going to sort of say a bit about when I lived in London. because it, I look back and I see that it was in some ways not good conditions for practice. Although, as Bhante says, commitment is primary and lifestyle is secondary. You know, lifestyle is significant. And so looking back to living in London, in the centre of London, I lived in South London for about 15 years. I lived on a council estate. It was crowded and noisy, and quite a lot of antisocial behaviour in our block, in the area, crime, violence, and some of this occasionally I came face to face with, or was involved in, or witnessed. Not that often, but you know, there was that sort of tension of knowing it was around. And so I was thinking back to the South London vibe and the gangs of youths and it's well dodgy here, isn't it? That mean, you know, just the way they talked and I lived there. You know, it sort of seems strange to me now. So it was a very busy area, a bit dodgy. I worked part-time as administrator. I also was trying to set up business as a complementary therapist, and that was a kind of career aspiration there. So I did a lot of courses and saw a lot of clients, and there's a sort of personal ambition there that this was going to fulfill me and make me happy. And also, there was quite a lot of online dating, and some of you will know that had its ups and downs. And also thought I was going to find some happiness there as well. And so, what was the effect of all this on me? Well, sometimes stress, sometimes overwhelm, and sometimes disconnection. And I was just used to it at the time, so I didn't sort of, I suppose, think how much that was affecting me. In 2002, I came across the London Buddhist Centre and thought I'd like to learn to meditate because of all this stress and stuff. Thought, oh, that might be able to help me. And I did go to classes, to go to classes there, and started going on meditation retreats. And that was good. I definitely started to free myself up from what they call these false refuges, you know, things that you think are going to make you happy, but ultimately they're kind of limited, they can't make you truly happy. So I started to free myself up. And fast forward from 2002, about 10 years, I was going along to the London Buddhist Centre, sort of working, trying to be successful in my career, trying to find a boyfriend. And something eventually, gradually, started to feel like I need to move out of this environment. I need better conditions for my practice. And very gradually, over quite a lot of time, decided to move somewhere. And somewhere more green and spacious and quiet and relaxed. And having considered lots of places, Bristol seemed, I'd only been here once in my whole life, and that was like when I was 20. Somehow I was like, just seemed to fit the bill, and that was the only reason. So I moved here, and into a lovely house on the edge of town. It's all green and spacious. And I had a longing for that, and it's definitely been very supportive. It's a bit, I feel a bit retreat-like living there. It's quiet and lots of nature, and very supportive for going for refuge. So I'm now living here, smaller city, house, garden, green, quiet. I do less work. virtually no romantic relationships, which has been a blessing on the whole, hardly any courses, and here, smaller Sangha. Smaller Sangha's been really important for me, actually. London was great in many ways, but for me, being the way I am, maybe more of an introvert, too big, and didn't quite find a foothold there, you know. So, yeah, the effect of living here, well, I've felt more relaxed, had more time and space for practice. Just generally that precept of stillness, simplicity and contentment has been strong. And so in 2017, I started Mitra study again, which hadn't quite worked out in London. And I asked for ordination that same year. And I just gradually started to develop spiritual friendships over time. And I thought, just to balance out my London impersonation, to go at Lush here, it's proper nice. Yeah. So, we're lucky here. So with this whole theme of creating space and, kind of letting go, moving from location to location, leaving home seems to be a very significant thread. So obviously I left my hometown, I left my family and friends when I moved here. All that I'd known really, in a way. The same thing applies to going on retreat. And I've done a lot of retreats, a lot of meditation retreats over this 22 years. And there seems, again, a sort of something significant about leaving the familiar, leaving the comforts of home. Mostly, unless you're doing a home retreat, when you go on a retreat and, letting go of the inputs and distractions of being at home and moving into simplicity and silence and more meditation and slowing down. And, and needing to do that to contact some more positive mental states, which are already there in us. But yeah, we're a bit too busy, aren't we, to kind of sense them maybe. So I was reflecting on being on retreat and that sort of simple pleasure of being present and feeling more fully alive and more appreciative and in touch with beauty. And how things and people around can appear more rich and vivid on a retreat. And I recalled a couple of times that even though they're really simple and ordinary, and they're like 20 years ago, or maybe not that long, 15. I was on retreat and I had these experiences that I still remember because I was in retreat conditions that were deeply moving. And one of them was at Rivendell, and I remember coming out the front door, crunching along the gravel, and I heard this bird song, and it was so piercing and penetrating and beautiful that I felt like I wasn't there. That I was just resonating with this sound, and I just had this really strong experience of clarity and purity, and it was so beautiful that I've remembered it all this time. And another time I was at Vajrasana, it's another Buddhist retreat centre over the other side of the country, obviously nearer to London where I was living, and at Vajrasana, I don't know if they still are, but there's a big row of tall poplar trees, those really tall, thin ones. And it was a very windy day, and the wind was blowing through these poplar trees, going shh. And I remember standing there and having this really strong experience of aliveness and freedom. And I felt very moved, you know, and kind of cried. And I don't know, it's just something about sound. There can be, and being in nature and being on retreat can have a strong effect and experiences I wouldn't normally have in kind of day-to-day life, maybe. So then I was thinking about, solitary retreat, which I did my first long solitary retreat a year ago, and then obviously going forth from home. But that was the strongest going forth from home I've ever had, even leaving my family home. And I remember looking at my car all packed up with stuff and realising that I was leaving friends and, you know, just all the familiar. And what was I going into? I didn't know. And I knew it was going to be 2 weeks. It was quite a long time. And, yeah, I just had this, like, oh, how can I do this, you know? And it was very difficult to drive away. And then I got there. It was about a three-hour drive. And if anyone knows Vimla Vadri's cottage, that's where I went. And then when I got there, I thought, oh, well, I've got to leave my mobile behind. I've got to leave my mobile in the car. I've got to turn it off. And that was a really strong going forth as well. And then I was completely alone. And... yeah, so very intensive conditions, and yeah, I decided I was going to try and go forth from time. So I left my watch in the kitchen drawer, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I just wanted to know, was it dinner time? Things like that. And I was trying to sort of create a kind of timetable, even though there was no reason to. Because I've got a strong planning mind, and it wanted to be there, you know. So yeah, that was all quite funny, really. And yeah, I think the main thing that came through on solitary was loneliness, actually. Not that often, maybe three times. I had this strong experience of loneliness. I was really missing human connection. And I noticed that each time I felt lonely and had a cry, I had a soundtrack going on. And all the songs that came up at that time, they were all soulful and melancholic, sort of, but quite beautiful, like The Long and Winding Road. Mm-hmm. And there was one by... what's her name? I'm blank now. Anyway, The Long and Winding Road was one of them. And yeah, it would just kind of go through my mind, and there'd be this heart feeling of really missing certain people, and missing home, and it was sad, but actually it was very beautiful because I was contacting who and what really matters to me, you know. And anyway, I decided that this part of me that came through when I was sad and lonely was called the soul singer, and that was one of the things I took away, that these parts of me came forth in the solitary, the planning mind, the planner, the soul singer. And then there was also the peaceful one, because my meditations were very deep, actually, on that trip. So yeah, there's a whole kind of thread of going forth by leaving home and being out of my familiar conditions. And then the last thing I want to share, really, is, well, what, like Judah's saying, what am I going forth to? And what's been opening up in this space I've created by moving here and having better lifestyle conditions, by going on retreat, practicing mindfulness, meditation, and so forth, looking at my wrong views. What's been opening up? And... well, one of the things I've become more aware of recently, but it's always been there, is a sense of appreciation and following what brings me alive. And if I look back and I see that my childhood conditioning and the way I used to be in London was more what Bantick calls utilitarian, more focused on the practical and survival and sort of making money, and there's been a shift there from being focused more on that towards being more appreciative. And Bante talks about the mandala of aesthetic appreciation, and it's a kind of it's a kind of shift into not so much what's practical, but into enjoying yourself and being playful and being more at ease, and allowing some spontaneity to come through. And I can see that's been happening in the space, you know, and kind of broadening and sensing who I am beyond my limiting beliefs, and sensing a new way of being. And kind of, I like this phrase, connecting to the world with my heart. And I feel that's been coming through. And I'll give a few examples. Well, I've been a lover of mantra chanting for many a year, and that continues. And but after this solitary, and I discovered my inner soul singer, I decided to join a choir. So there's a kind of continuity there. And so last year I joined a choir, and that was really lovely. And that sort of... there's something about sound that seems very significant here. And but also the sense of sight, this appreciation of sound, but appreciation through the visual as well. So I'm quite a keen amateur photographer in a contemplative kind of meditative way. And that's been around for quite a while, but I feel that's coming through more. And I've been sharing that more. And this year I've always loved images and art, and I've decided to book a holiday to Amsterdam to go and see the art there. And just generally through meditation and friendship and walks in nature, there's this sort of appreciative way of relating to the world is really something I see coming through. And it's always been there, but somehow there's more space for it to come through more fully, and to recognise it as my practice as well. So yeah, one of the last things is quite a recent thing that is coming through. Maybe in the last 5 months or so, I've been more aware of it, but it was there already, but it's just become more obvious. I think my tendency has been to be more withdrawn, to withdraw, and have an individual practice, and almost be semi-renunciate, you could say. And that's my comfort zone. And what I see now is the internal focus that is more natural, or has been, is becoming more relational. And that's kind of like my working edge. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily just coming through like the appreciative. It's something I have to work with a bit more consciously, you could say. And there's something about becoming more visible and more interactive. And I suppose I've just been realising, so my practice isn't just about creating space and focusing on renunciation. It's about bringing my practice more into relationship with other people, and particularly in the Sangha, and kind of extending myself beyond myself and towards other people. So just a couple of examples before I finish of, well, how's this been manifesting in my actual life? Well, just before Christmas, Chawala Malani asked me to sing one of my choir songs at Women's Morning on my own, which was at first, but I rose to the challenge. I only sung about one verse, but hey, it was a big deal for me anyway. And then a few months ago, there was an arts cafe, and I can't remember how that came about, but I decided to share some of my photos. And so again, not my comfort zone to kind of be in front of people and share myself in a way. But I did it and it went well. And then I've also decided in recent months to support a meditation class. So that's a bit more kind of upfront, potentially, you know. And I tried to lead some mindful movement, which was, a whole other story anyway. I got a bit nervous. And then I'm doing this talk, which is like, whoa, never given a talk before, sort of thing. So, yeah, something's becoming more visible in the space, and there's something about becoming more relational as well. So, to conclude, rather like Judith said, the going forth has so far been a very gradual and natural process, kind of letting go into a more simple, spacious, peaceful lifestyle. And way of being. So not forcibly giving up my old lifestyle, but just not being interested in it anymore, and more drawn to practicing the Dharma. And recognizing going forth is an ongoing process. So that's some of my history, but we're going forth all the time, aren't we? And I'm particularly working with wrong views at the moment, and it's been very freeing to see how I've been trapped by my view of myself, you know. Yeah, and to finish, I'm going to read a poem which I feel sums up something of my going forth so far. So it's called Clearing by Martha Postlethwaite. Do not try to save the whole world or do anything grandiose. Instead, create a clearing in the dense forest of your life and wait there patiently until the song that is your life falls into your own cupped hands and you recognize and greet it. Only then will you know how to give yourself to this world so worthy of rescue.